we had a central team that was creating all the knowledge PNG had in one certain domain. And we partnered in putting together that knowledge all into a vector database and making it available through GenAI and RAG. Well, the moment we launched that, the system got more queries in the first month than the central team had received in the last 10 years.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by the Wharton School in collaboration with Accenture. My name is Christian Terwisch. I'm a professor here at Wharton, but I also co-direct our MAC Institute for Innovation Management. It's our goal to cut through the noise to deliver actionable insights for business leaders by combining cutting-edge research with real-world case studies. Things are changing fast, so let's dive right in. On today's episode, we're going to explore how AI impacts the industry of consumer packaged goods. From coming up with product enhancements for diapers to smarter supply chains for shampoo, most of us will agree that AI has the potential to enhance creativity, improve productivity, and maybe even lead to more sustainable operations. Joining me for today's conversation, I'm excited to introduce Alfredo Colas. Alfredo is the Chief Data and AI Officer at Procter & Gamble. Welcome, Alfredo.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Christian.
Alfredo, you have been at P&G for 29 years. How did you transition from your prior roles in marketing and operations to your current position as Chief Data and AI Officer?
I would argue that I have always been part of the data community from going back to my first job back in Spain 29 years ago. I've always been in and out combining data and its application into the business. Back in 2021, the opportunity came to really become part of this team and lead this team forward. Little I knew what was coming ahead of us and the full AI revolution that was about to start a few months later.
As a business school professor, when I think of P&G, the first thing that comes to my mind is your track record of excellence in product development and innovation. How is your innovation and ideation process now supported by AI?
Well, we have a track record, as you mentioned, of 187 years delivering great products and brands that are used by consumers around the world to improve their lives in small and meaningful ways every day. So when it came to leveraging AI, it wasn't anything completely new, but it started embedding these new capabilities that are becoming available into our existing processes. So it wasn't about reinventing the ideation process. It's about how can we do ideation better as we use AI. As a matter of fact, we did a hackathon with the Wharton School of Business as well as Harvard a year or so ago, where we put over 700 of our experts from marketing and R&D and look at how we could leverage AI as part of our ideation processes. And what we saw is this new concept of the cybernetic teammate, where we could see AI helping both our marketing and our R&D specialists come up with better and more holistic ideas than when they were working individually or even when they were working together, but without the support of AI.
Interesting. Can you give us an example of what came out of that?
Definitely. So as part of the study, they were divided into four cohorts. Two of them without AI, two of them with AI, and it was either individually working a person from R&D or a person of marketing working individually, or a team of two working together, again, without AI or with AI. What we saw is that an individual with AI was able to perform better than a team without AI. A team with AI was able to have a disproportionate amount of ideas in the top 10. And these ideas, by the way, were assessed not just by AI or by our professors, but also by business leaders. And they systematically believe that those ideas were better when the AI was being used as part of the process.
That's fascinating. In my mind, P&G is famous for creating really deep market insights through user observation. You have labs, you have at-home studies. How can you have deeper insights in consumers by having the AI observe virtual consumers? Can you tell us a little bit more about gaining consumer insights as well?
I think that AI does not replace that first-party data, that going into the consumer visit, talking to them, and understanding their concerns, understand their daily lives, their habits, and from there gaining relevant insights about problems they are facing or opportunities that we can come up with products. At the same time, AI is great at going through all the data that has been collected, summarizing it without biases, and providing new ideas. Even if it is amount of ideas that we can generate using AI is significantly higher than the number of ideas that a team can generate individually. So we see again the power of using the human skills, the human experience, the human intuition, together with the power of AI to come up with better products, not as a replacement of.
So you emphasize this kind of the human in the loop here of innovation. So tell us more about finding the initial pain points. So I understand that P&G and other companies in product design, you start with contextual observations, almost like anthropologists study remote tribes. You study the consumers, their pain points, observe the emotions. Can you tell us more about that process and how that then interfaces with the AI?
Well, I think that is a bit of a secret formula that we have that I'm not sure I can release now to everyone. But let me just say that a lot of the processes that you have described in the past, they happened only manually or a human with a computer. Now they are being enhanced with the use with AI. I mean, let me use this opportunity to kind of remind people that actually P&G invented the concept of going into in homes and asking consumers how they use the products. So we've been doing this for over 100 years. I call that back then, that was a real big data when you had to send people, gather all of that in notebooks, in papers, and bring it back to the office and try to make sense of it. Then we automated it significantly as computers came into the game. And now it's been expanded even more as we bring AI as, again, another element into the formula, not as a complete replacement of the formula.
I guess it's called generative AI for a reason. What we find in our research here at Wharton, we show that AI rocks at generating ideas. But at the end of the day, somebody has to make a decision, which gets us back to the human in the loop that you mentioned. Pick a product concept, make a sales forecast. How do you use that part of the AI and hand it over to ultimately, it's going to be a human who has to make the managerial decision?
So Gen AI produces data. Is new data that is produced, that is presented then for business leaders. And as you were rightly saying, the business leader is the one that has to go and make the decision to go with option A, option B, or option C. Gen AI can help us make them more detailed than they would be otherwise, or explore, maybe now we have three options instead of two. But in the end, it is a person, it's a business leader that is making the decision to go in one direction or another. As I always tell my team, I mean, you cannot come back and say that the old student excuse that the dog ate my homework. You cannot come back and say, no, the product was a flop because Gen AI made that recommendation. No, someone, a human, signed that recommendation and a human approved it. Of course, happy that they use AI along the process, but until AI doesn't get a cut of their salary, I assume that they are the ones responsible for the decision.
Where do you see the frontier at the moment? We just did a study here where we found that human ideas are still a little bit more diverse than the AI-generated ideas. The AI kind of comes up with good ideas, but oftentimes they tend to be too similar to each other. Does that resonate with you?
I think I have evidence to argue both sides of it. I think it depends both on the quality of the team that you have and how diverse that team is. It also depends on how well you're prompting the tools and what context you are providing to them. I still believe that the best is when you have a combination of the two.
How good is AI just beyond generating words? I mean, I'm thinking about your products. Smell, aesthetics, taste, and touch are critical attributes in much of what you produce. Does AI help you there as well?
We are using AI in as many places as we see it delivering value. And by the way, I'm using AI in the most generic form of it. I'm not just referring to Gen AI. AI has been helping us make choices about ingredients for years, going back to the 80s, when we were using some of the very early algorithms to get the right mix of coffee beans for Folgers. It's been a long time since when we have been using AI, and we continue to expand the footprint and the the level of adoption for each of those business processes.
Since we're transitioning from the Gen AI and innovation part to kind of quoting for traditional analytics, tell us more about other applications than innovation ideation, such as inventory management, pricing, promotions. What else have you seen recently change with AI?
A few themes where we see AI playing across the company. First of all, is driving personal productivity. We have tens of thousands of users leveraging our internal tools to help them create summaries, to help them write a new recommendation or just get inspiration as they get ready for some other work. It's being used for translations significantly. We're also using to accelerate workflows and processes. And also what we see is our ability to increase quality. Third is we see it as a great opportunity to better curate and democratize knowledge across the company. And last, as we were talking, is it applies in accelerating and improving our ideation processes. Let me give you an example on democratizing knowledge. We had a central team that was creating all the knowledge P&G had in one certain domain. And they came to us and we partnered in putting together that knowledge all into a vector database and making it available through Gen AI and RAG. Well, the moment we launched that, the system got more queries in the first month than the central team had received in the last 10 years. So again, there was a desire to access that knowledge. There was a need to access that knowledge. However, it seems people saw the friction of having to go and call or write to someone in the central team asking for that information as too much. The moment we removed all that friction, make it very easily accessible to everyone, consumption skyrocketed. And that was knowledge that has been part of P&G all along. And that is a big opportunity that we see, is how we democratize that knowledge that already exists and make it available to all those that need it.
What I like about your example is it's a great story how the AI is not automating somebody to replace a job, but you're creating value, really, right? I mean, you're democratizing the knowledge, which allows more people to jump into the party of innovation and more ideas lead ultimately to better ideas.
Exactly. And all those people no longer have to spend days or weeks trying to figure out where that knowledge is. They go get the answer and kind of spend the rest of their time into actually driving that better idea.
I wonder if that's also the answer to my next question. I'm just thinking about whether it's your Gillette razors, it's diapers from Pampers. You're competing against other firms who also have access to AI. Now, that boils down to a competitive advantage. Is that long history of consumer insights that you have accumulated and are now making available to your innovators inside the company, is that your competitive advantage for the future?
We believe that deep understanding of consumer needs is one of our competitive advantages, and so is our ability to turn those insights into superior products. That's a question that we try to continue to improve. We believe in our products being superior, in our packaging to be superior, our communication to be superior, our execution, whether it's in retail, physical stores, or online, to be superior. And of course, we want to provide superior value, whether it is to the retailers that buy our products or the consumers that ultimately take their products into their houses and use it. That's the full equation that we want to optimize and where we want to be superior. And again, we want to think that our history and all the data that we have, all the knowledge that we have accumulated is one of the competitive advantages.
I guess implementing AI is more of a marathon than a 100-meter dash. And Alfredo, you mentioned that this has been a journey at Procter & Gamble that you've been taking for many years now. How aspirational are your goals for the future? What comes next?
I think more than a marathon, it feels like a marathon run at 260 sprints. And once you're finished with that, the next one comes. I think that AI and Gen AI revolution that we're living in is clearly an inflection point in the evolution of work. At the same time, I think that we're still very early in this new fourth so-called industrial revolution. I think that as part of this revolution, there will be work that will disappear. There will be new work that appear, and most roles will be transformed. I heard someone say the other day that there may be jobs that don't get transformed by AI, but I don't know of any. Our aspiration, again, is about AI being an augmentation factor, not a replacement factor.
How has the AI changed the nature of work so far? I mean, you've been at P&G for 29 years. If you go back to employees that you've managed 5, 10, maybe even 20 years ago, would their work already today look dramatically different from that back then? Somebody working in an R&D lab, somebody doing kind of consumer insights. How much has changed already?
Compared to 20, 30 years ago, work had already changed a lot before Gen AI came into the mix. And now it's been a catalyst of additional work. As I look at Gen AI, I think this is the, in my experience, the second fastest technology in terms of being adopted across the full company. And the prior one was when we launched Teams just a week before the COVID shutdown, which actually drove absolutely everyone to use it right after. But it was more driven by external factors. The adoption of Gen AI across the company has been fantastic. And what is most important is that I keep being surprised by people coming back to me and saying how they are using the technology in ways that I had never thought on my own. So truly people are living up to that innovative spirit. They are truly looking at these generative capabilities to get it to do a lot of things that we had not thought of originally.
Alfredo, you mentioned the human in the loop and how central the employees for you at P&G are as opposed to kind of being targets for replacement. How do you avoid that the work of your employees gets more stressful as the AI does work and the humans have to kind of sign off of important decisions for which they carry the responsibility, but they didn't have the years and years of time to grow and get familiar with the data? The reason I'm asking is I just talked to a radiology department chair here at Penn, and she mentioned how radiologists are really burning out and stressed as work flows faster and faster, and they still carry a lot of the responsibility. So how do you make sure that the humans also have not just their productivity gains, but they have work that they continue to enjoy going to?
I think as Mr. Trudeau said probably 7 or 8 years ago, the world has never run as fast as it is today, and today is the slowest day it will ever be in the future. I'm paraphrasing his quote, apologies if I butchered it, but this has been going on for a long, long time. I mean, before the emergence of Gen AI, our work was already happening multiple times faster than 5, 10, or 15 years ago. And that has been enabled by all the prior revolutions, the computer, the internet, cloud, mobile, all these different revolutions have accelerated the speed of business. And I think Gen AI is yet another catalyst. It is another accelerator. And I think we will all have to get used to it. At the same time, I want to look at it the positive side. I mean, I look forward to have agents that know me, know how I work, how I think, understand my preferences, and they can do a lot of routine work for me. They can identify exceptions ahead of me while I am sleeping, detect new conditions, something new happening, and letting me know instead of me having to go or my team having to go through the data. I look forward to it helping me prepare documentation and materials that are personalized for the audience. I think the concept of meetings is going to transform radically. Today, we spend a lot of time during the meeting trying to provide context to each of the different people. And you realize multiple times that different people have different levels of understanding, which makes the meeting much longer for everyone. I look forward to AI helping us curate materials, curate knowledge for each person based on their existing understanding, their existing knowledge. And then we can really use the meeting itself, if we need one, to have a deeper conversation. So that's the piece I hope that AI is going to help us, is eliminate the toil, eliminate the routine work, and help us have far more human interaction and reflection.
You mentioned that this is the slowest moving world that we ever live in. It's probably also the dumbest AIs that we ever interact with. It's only going to get more crazy. So thank you for these wise words. Alfredo, in that spirit, how do you deal with upskilling and training and preparing your employees for these new days?
We definitely believe in upskilling all our employees, and we have different tiers, different plans of training based on level at the company and type of work. So for our top executives, it's more from a strategy perspective and how they have to think about AI and how it can transform the way they organize, the way they define the works. I don't need them to be able to write algorithms. I need them to understand the potential of algorithms to transform the business results of their business units. As then we go down and lower into the organization, it moves more into an operationalization, how you execute the work, how you run your workflows in a different way by using AI. And of course, we make a lot of trainings internally developed and externally and developed to make sure that absolutely everyone from the most junior employee to the highest in the company have the basic understanding and can really leverage it to drive productivity and growth for the company.
Awesome. So then any advice for colleagues in other industries or in other settings where AI is deployed?
So a few thoughts. First of all, AI is a mean, not an end. So be clear on what end you're trying to achieve. What is the business objective that you're trying to achieve? And make sure you have the leadership of your company aligned and supportive of that direction. Second, and we talked about it, is investing your employees. They are the ones that are going to make this happen or fail. And third one, from a technology perspective, how do you create the relevant platforms that allow you and provide you the right foundation on which you can scale much faster and move away from just POCs, but truly into meaningful value created for the company?
Thank you so much, Alfredo. I learned a ton today and I can't wait to weave this back into my teaching. Thank you for joining me on our podcast, Where AI Works.
Thank you very much. The pleasure is mine. Looking forward to talking again.
As we're wrapping up today's episode, allow me to reflect on some of the implications of what Alfredo taught us today. There are a couple of things that stood out to me. A common tale that we all have heard is that AI will free us hardworking employees from the boring, low-value-adding tasks so that we can focus on the creative work. Now, it has increasingly become clear to me that this is nonsense. Already now, AI is creative, and creative problem solving really is in the sweet spot of AI rather than being in the blind spot. I think the P&G examples were great illustrations for that. Second, humans remain critical in guiding the AI. This includes identifying consumer pain points, but also the final decision making that Alfredo mentioned. This gets us to this idea of democratizing knowledge, something that Eric Van Hippel at MIT has been advocating for a very long period of time. It gets us to the end of our time together today. Thank you so much for listening. Please follow us so that you don't miss an episode, and be sure to tune in next time when I'll be speaking with Hada Iyengar-Plum, IBM's Vice President of AI First Transformation. You have been listening to our podcast, Where AI Works, Conversations at the Intersection of AI and Industry, brought to you by the Wharton School in collaboration with Accenture. I'm Christian Terbisch, and on behalf of all of us here at the Wharton School, thank you for listening.